Let me introduce you to Anna Bernasek. Anna is a financial journalist who's been published in pretty much every major publication and is now in print with her brand new book, which is called The Economics of Integrity, From Dairy Farmers to Toyota, How Wealth is Built on Trust and What That Means for Our Future. Good morning, Anna. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Paul. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, when we talk about the economy in this country, we've got a broken trust right now, don't we?
Absolutely, because, I mean, if you think about what a recession really is about a setback in trust. So I think that's where we are in the sort of the broader macro economy. But I think, you know, if you look at other aspects too, you know, the financial crisis, I mean, that's also all about a sort of a breakdown in trust. You know, President Obama has talked about a deficit of trust in the political system. So I think we are in a sort of a bad situation in terms of trust right now.
I want to talk about the banks and other big parts of the economy, but I really want to talk for a moment here about Toyota.
Okay.
Because here's a company that was trusted by a lot of people, myself included, for a long, long time. I've driven a lot of cars that have been built in Georgetown, Kentucky at the Toyota Camry plant, and now here's a brand that, you know, had really built itself up on trust, which is now getting more than just dinged around. What's happened to that trust in Toyota?
Paul, it's really a complicated topic in the sense that there's still a lot of confusion out there about what actually happened and what didn't happen. Do you know what I mean? But big picture, yes, they definitely are suffering from, a lack of trust by the public. I'm of the mind that I haven't seen anything out there, though, that would say to me they have done something fundamentally wrong or tried to hide anything or cover anything up. You know, I really understand the circumstances where they had a very difficult problem, which was very rare, and they really tried to work on it, and it took them a long time to figure it out. So I don't see, and I don't think anybody has proven that they've done anything wrong. So I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with the company, but I do think the way that they sort of handled the problem with the public and with consumers probably wasn't up to their normal way of handling things.
Well, part of the problem might also be that they didn't pay attention to how the company was growing, perhaps too quickly, and took their eye off of quality control, which is the very basis of the trust that consumers had in Toyota.
I think that people would argue that, Paul. I'm not sure that they took their eye off quality in the sense that their manufacturing system is set up to spot problems. I mean, it's very hard to get something by them. So I think if it's a quality problem, it's come from maybe, you could argue maybe from the supplier side in the sense of not really understanding that those components they were getting or not being on top of it there. But I think their actual fundamental manufacturing system is set up to catch those problems.
Can they recover?
Oh, absolutely. I think, of course, they can. I mean, you know, here am I saying that, and then something bad will happen tomorrow. No. I think that if you look at this company, I mean, they have done remarkable things over the course of decades. I think this is a setback for them. But you have to remember, their whole philosophy is to be in business for the long term. And the way that they deal with the setback is to say, okay, we will just improve. We will do better. And, you know, it might not happen tomorrow. It might take us months, it might take us years, but we will do this. So I'm optimistic about them.
Okay, so then how about an American car company like General Motors, which went through tough times and needed a government bailout to keep itself going and seems to be getting its footing again? Was that a lack of trust?
Well, I would say it was a lack of integrity. And here, can I just make a distinction? When I talk about integrity and trust, I talk about it being a relationship. And it's the fundamental relationship you need for any transaction to succeed. So on the one hand, you need integrity on the business side, the provider of the service or the good. And on the other hand, you need trust by the consumer. And I think in terms of General Motors' case, race. I think they took their eye off the ball in terms of defects. I mean, I think they were concerned about selling the car, and they were concerned about doing whatever it took. So they would build flashy cars, things with gimmicks, anything to sell. At the same time, they continued to say they were focused on quality, but they really, you know, had a lot of issues with quality and defects. And I think when you promise something to consumers, you need to deliver it, and that's where they have that trust. And I think they didn't deliver on the quality.
Plus, they were coming out with models that people didn't want to buy, regardless of how the quality may have been perceived.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the you know, there was that era of big is better, and so, you know, people were into all those big cars, and then when the environmental environment changed, I think they were sort of slow to adapt to that.
Talking with financial journalist Anna Bernasek, whose book is called The Economics of Integrity. All right, let's talk about the banking system in this country, which is at the heart of the incredibly bad economy, this recession that we're all living through right now. Where was the trust broken? Was it on Wall Street, or was it in the ivory towers of financial institutions, or was it in Washington with a Congress and a White House that in the late 90s decided to deregulate the system? Where was the trust broken?
Paul, you talked about it all. I mean, I think in every part that you just mentioned. I mean, really, this is something that it was a chain of players that were involved in this financial crisis. And you would have to say, I mean, it started, you know, maybe at the beginning with people, let's put it this way, at the beginning of the chain, you know, you had people taking on mortgages that they really shouldn't have been taking on because they knew that probably they couldn't repay them. But you also had people pushing those mortgages on them. And, you know, you had all the way down the chain to Wall Street repackaging these crazy things and selling them to their customers, knowing that this stuff didn't make sense and could potentially blow up. You had regulators turning the other way, not, you know, unknowing that there was something going on here that wasn't great, but hey, what are we going to do about it? So everybody in the chain was involved here.
When we talk about integrity, that's a word that for a lot of people, for generations, has equaled a bank. I mean, if your profession was banker, oh, you were respected because you were a guy who people could trust
yes.
with their money. Not true anymore, right?
Well, you know, I think this is, we're sort of at the crossroads here. On the one hand, look, there weren't any, I mean, you know, in terms of ordinary people putting their savings in banks, you know, people like me or you, there's no reason not to trust them. I mean, we are covered by the FDIC. We aren't going to lose our money. So in that sense, I mean, you still have that trust in your money in a bank is going to be fine. The issue, though, is I think for consumers, the credit card companies and, you know, loans, I think, from the bank, you know, if you want to get a loan from a bank, how will you be treated and will you be treated fairly? Plus, the credit cards where, you know, suddenly your limit is dropped, suddenly you get these astronomical high interest rates. And I think, you know, they are in danger of really undermining their customer base unless they come out and start treating people fairly.
I think that's a big part of it, particularly when it comes to credit cards. We'll talk more about it in just a moment here with Anna Bernasek. Anna's book is called The Economics of Integrity. I'm Paul Harris. More in a moment on 84 WHAS. 33 degrees now in Louisville. I'm Paul Harris talking with financial journalist Anna Bernasek about her book, The Economics of Integrity. In the book, Anna, you talk about needing integrity for even the most mundane daily transactions, including buying a gallon of milk, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, this is really interesting, Paul, because people's reactions to this notion are very different. Some people are like, oh, yeah, that's absolutely obvious. And other people are like, I don't see that. And what I've understood now is that it's something that we just take for granted. When you go into the store and you buy a gallon of milk, you're not thinking about all the trust that you have in all the people who act with integrity and bring that milk so that it's safe to you. It's something that, you know, in our daily lives, if we stopped and thought about every single thing that we do, we're relying on thousands and thousands of people to act with integrity. And we just take all that for granted.
Are we wrong to do that?
Oh, are we wrong? No, I don't think we're wrong. I think that I don't think we're wrong in the sense that it is something that we can count on. But I think we're wrong in the sense that we don't appreciate it. Because I think if you appreciate what actually makes the economy great, you can learn to do more of it. And I think that's the source of how we can kind of get out of this mess, how we can create more trust, more integrity, and more wealth.
Doesn't that trust really come from somebody proving themselves? We may offer them a little bit of trust the first time we buy whatever the product is, but if I were to go to the store and I'd never had milk before and I bought a gallon of milk and it turned out to be sour or I got sick from it or whatever it was, there, I would never develop any trust in them.
Yes.
But if I go to the supermarket every week and keep buying milk from that same shelf in the same supermarket, I don't really have to worry about that.
Yes. No, I think you're absolutely right. And that's why it is very much a relationship of integrity and trust. There has to be integrity there first, you know, in order for you to trust. I mean, you're right. Maybe you would just trust initially and then you get burned and you won't trust again. But for it to be a long-term, wealth-creating relationship, you need integrity to start with.
Ronald Reagan famously said, trust but verify, which now David Caruso uses over and over again on CSI Miami. Are you saying that for the most part, we don't even worry about the verify part of that equation?
Yes, for our basic lives. You know, when we get in a car, we're trusting other drivers, but we don't really think about that. When you get on a plane, you're trusting all the people from the mechanics to the airplane maker to the pilots to, you know, all these people. You're not really thinking about it. When you go to a restaurant and you sit down and you eat, you're not thinking about all the people involved and whether you trust them and all the steps that they did to bring you that food. So I think on a day-to-day basis, we aren't verifying, and that's what creates the efficiency in our economy. That's what allows us to get on with our lives, go to work, do things quickly.
Tell me about government's role in this, particularly when it comes to disclosure and accountability.
The government, Paul, can do some pretty critical things to enhance integrity and trust in the economy. And, you know, that can be from, and maybe we can talk about the finance system as an example here, where if you bring things out into the open so people can decide whether they want to buy or sell or trade or what have you, if you have simple rules where people intuitively understand it makes sense to follow these rules, and they are simple, and they are easily understood. And if you have a system where you can actually give people the understanding that if they break the rules, there's a good chance they'll be caught, if you have those three components, you really promote integrity and trust in the economy. And it's something that, you know, we could do today when we're talking about reforming the financial system.
When you talk about rules, are you talking about needing more regulation there, or do you believe in saying to the free market, you guys be in charge of it and set it up and we trust you to make it work?
I tell you what, Paul, I don't believe in that debate between regulation and free market. I think it's a dead end, because the truth is any market needs rules. You know, the stock exchange is the greatest example of that. There are plenty of rules, but they're rules that set people free to do the right thing and create wealth. And we've been so stuck in this dead-end debate that is not helpful. We do need to think about rules. We need to think about guidelines. But they need to be simple, they need to be efficient, and they need to make sense to people so that we do it. And I can give you plenty of examples of rules. You know, in the book I talk about eBay, where they set up basic rules or guidelines for how to operate. And that actually helped people to do the right thing and create wealth. So we need to sort of, I think our whole philosophy about rules is wrong. We set up rules to catch people or to catch bad guys. And instead, we need to think about creating rules that set people free to do the right thing.
Help me understand a couple of things about simple economic transactions that Americans do on a daily basis. I know you talk in the book a little bit about something as simple as taking money out of an ATM or making a deposit at an ATM,
yes,
which should be much simpler, and it is. You know, it's a push-button operation for us. You read the screen, you push the button, boom, $2.20s come out of the slot if you asked it for $40.
Right.
And yet that's so complicated behind the scenes and so laden with mechanisms, I think, that slow the whole thing down when it comes to reconciling between our life and what actually happens at the bank.
Right. It's actually fascinating. When I started looking into this, I had no idea. I thought I just walked up to the ATM, got my money out, and that was it, instantaneous, and never thought about it. And when I looked into it, I was just fascinated by, you know, potentially you can have sort of 8, 10, 12 different players involved behind the scenes, all sort of passing on this one electronic transaction so that it can be verified and ends up at your bank. And it's just this incredible chain of people doing what they say they're going to do so that you can actually get your money out instantly whenever you want to.
Yeah. I love the notion of all those people you never see, whether it's buying milk or getting money out of the ATM or ordering dinner at a restaurant or whatever it is, all those unseen people that, you know, you can never go and check to see if they're actually doing their job, but you'll know it if they don't in the long run, and that's where the trust comes from.
Exactly, Paul, and it's all of us, right? This is about all of us out there doing what we say we're going to do, and that's why I find it so exciting, too, because, you know, so often we think of the economy as this sort of dirty game where, you know, people are just out for themselves, and yet when you really look at the economy, it's about you and me out there, you know, really behaving with integrity and trust. Trusting other people, and that's how wealth is created. So I almost think it really goes back to this notion of the dignity of work.
I love the title of the book only because it goes on forever, Anna. The Economics of Integrity. And this is where you must have been paid by words for the title here, or the publisher decided, you know, let's put as many words on the cover as possible.
But no, it was the publisher.
The Economics of Integrity, From Dairy Farmers to Toyota, How Wealth is Built on Trust and What That Means for Our Future. I think the Economics of Integrity says it all, and it's a great topic, and I thank you for coming on to talk about it.
Thank you so much.